Jackson, we got to be the weirdest couple.
Don't feel ever... so bad. Don't feel so bad.
Are we the oddest couple that you've ever had on the show in the 300 episodes?
Jackson.
Welcome to Not in a Huff with Jackson Huff, where we interview newsmakers, storytellers, and all-around interesting people. Sit back, relax, unless you're driving, and enjoy the show. Here's Jackson.
Hello, hello, hello. I am Jackson Huff. This is Not in a Huff. Thanks so much for joining me. As always, really appreciate it. This week, oh my goodness, you are in for a treat. I am speaking with Joel and Carmela Waldman. I don't even know how to describe this conversation. I'll tell you, they wrote a book together. Joel is the son and Carmela is the mother. And they wrote a book called Surviving the Survivor. It's all about Carmela's story. She is a Holocaust survivor. She was born in Eastern Europe. During that time, she's a child survivor. But the book talks a little bit about, you know, the really sad parts of that time. Her father and several other people in her family were taken to concentration camps and did perish. But the book is only about 20% that. The rest of it is about just their relationship and life advice from Carmela, who Joel affectionately calls Carm. The book is a happy book, but it's about, you know, the Holocaust and what Carmela kind of took from it and what she spent the rest of her life kind of as because of that experience. She is now 86 years old. So I say this is a fun one. This is an interesting one. And it certainly is, because Joel and Carmela, their relationship is an extremely unique one. That's what I'll say. I had them both on. They live about 10 miles apart, but they were in separate places when I spoke with them. Just the banter they have, ribbing and I guess bickering that they do is funny. I can't say much other than that it's really funny. So we're going to talk about the book. We're going to talk about what made them decide to write the book. And I say them. Joel is really the one that wrote it. There's a joke about how, you know, Carmela gets a lot of the credit and she signs all the books, but Joel's the one that wrote the book. We're going to talk a lot about the book. And then we're going to talk about their podcast. Hard to remember. The book's called Surviving the Survivor. The podcast is called Surviving the Survivor. So easy to remember. They're both called the same thing. I started out kind of just as a podcast with the two of them, kind of that they're kind of their banter and then interviewing interesting people. A lot like this podcast. But then it kind of morphed into a true crime daily show that Joel does on YouTube. You very well may be familiar with Surviving the Survivor on YouTube. It gets 200,000 listens a day or more, so it's certainly a really powerful thing where they advocate for victims and talk to people there. Their tagline's actually the best guest in true crime. They've talked to a lot of really, really impactful people. Carmela's kind of stepped back a little bit now that it's turned into a true crime podcast. She's certainly not on every day. There's not a lot I can say about this other than you just need to listen to this interview. Joel makes a joke that my listeners are going to think that they're crazy, and he even asked them to email him about just how crazy they are. I'm going to tell you, please do not email them and tell them that they're crazy. These people are amazing. I really, really enjoyed speaking with them, and I know my listeners are nice people, and I know they're not going to feel that way, because it's amazing. It's a really, really awesome conversation, but you just have to listen. Here's Joel and Carmela Waldman. Joel and Carmela Waldman, how are you guys?
Great.
Doing very well. Thank you for having us on. I apologize in advance for the train wreck that is about to be your show. Not because of you, but because of my beloved mother and I. I don't want to complain right out of the gates, but it's been a long, torturous day, as many of my days are. I just finished my own podcast, which is called Surviving the Survivor. It is a weekly live true crime show. I'm kind of like the Larry King of true crime. We have tagline is best guess in true crime, and we truly do have the best guess. However, the reason I bring it all up right away before you even ask about it, I just finished a podcast. One of my kids has COVID. I have three children, and now I had to deal with my mother trying to get on to Zoom, which basically almost was the end of me. But anyway, I digress, and I apologize for hijacking the show so early on. Jackson, thank you very much for having us.
Well, we're going to unpack most of that. I did get to listen to briefly your live show earlier. I didn't listen to the whole thing, but I got to listen to kind of hear you do your thing. So you've been doing a lot more today than I have. So I'm sure you're tired.
I'm a little worn out. And the person who has no mercy is my mother.
Yeah.
Second person who has no mercy is my wife. And the three others who have no mercy are my kids. So it's sort of a lonely existence.
Well, I'll try to have as much mercy as possible.
Jackson, you want to hear how I am?
I absolutely do. Please do. Tell us.
I am great. I have no complaints and everything is good.
Now, I don't want to stereotype, but Jackson is literally in Indiana. That is the epitome of the Midwest, well-mannered, sure. Handsome, clean-cut Indiana University graduate, Indiana Pacers fan. Carm, do you know what sport the Pacers true. Are?
May I say something? I lived yes. in Illinois, Champaign-Urbana, Illinois for a while.
Yeah. Well, I'm in Indianapolis, so yeah. I mean, that's just a couple hours away.
Is that an attenuating circumstance?
Say it again.
Is it like an excuse for me to say I know how it is in those parts of the country because I live there?
No, it's just finding common ground, right?
Yes. Yeah. Yes.
Yeah, Carm. My point with bringing up Jackson. Being in the Midwest is he's definitely not going to be used to, I don't know, the obnoxious level of New Jersey, New Yorkers, and now.
No.
So let's let Jackson host.
I am going to behave very well.
Yeah.
Well, I'll tell you, I mean, I've listened to you guys on other podcasts, so I do know a little bit what to expect, but I don't think that I'm going to, as green behind the ears as you think, just because in a different way, and it is a very different way, my grandmother is actually from the same area. She's from Germany. So I'm used to kind of that very bluntness. So I've got it down pat. She moved here in 1949. So I actually had her on for my 100th episode. That's almost 200 episodes ago, but we talked about, you know, her experience during the same time period, obviously a very different experience. She grew up as, you know, a German citizen and kind of that world and, you know, not knowing too much of what was happening, but knowing that people were starting to disappear. So it's a really special episode to me just because she now has, she has dementia. So she wouldn't be able to do that episode anymore. But no, I say that to say I grew up with the same kind of bluntness, so I'm here for it.
Sorry.
May
to hear
I ask
about the
Jackson
dementia.
What year was she born?
Yeah, that's a good question. I believe she was born in 1941.
Okay, so
Carm's got her beat by 2 years. Carm's not shy.
I was
at her
born
age.
In 1939. 1939,
And yeah, I mean Jackson, I don't know if everyone knows, but my mom is a child Holocaust survivor. She's 4 and a half. When it all broke, you know, happened, at least in her part of the, she's from the former Yugoslavia, now known as Serbia. And I think one of the reasons you have us on, we've got the True Crime podcast that's doing very well, thank God. And then I had the, because of the success of the podcast, I was asked or given the opportunity to write a book under the same name, Surviving the Survivor. And that book is about my dear mother. It's like 20% her Holocaust story and 80% her cursing at me and giving life advice. And if you've heard of Tuesdays with Maury, it's similar to that, but much more dysfunctional. And it's got a blurb from Mitch Albom himself. So it's an interesting read.
Yeah, I want you to kind of
let him run the show, Joel, please. It's very hard for Joel. You know how people get their professional deviation, and after a while they can, when Joel goes on as a guest on somebody else's podcast, He interviews them. He runs the show. Don't let it happen,
I
Jackson.
actually want to interview Jackson. Jackson, is this a full-time gig or what's the 9 to 5, if I may ask?
It is not a full-time gig. My regular job is I work in the administration of a university, so I'm in admissions and advising.
Oh, very, that's
So I
very
spend my
interesting.
evenings talking to people about their lives and problems, and I spend my days talking to people about their lives and their problems, just in a different way. So it
We
works out.
have the most problems and a lot of life, unfortunately. But
No, and like I was telling you beforehand, I've talked to a lot of people, and honestly, when guests, come in with a knowing what they want to say, it makes it a lot easier for me. I mean, my goal is to share an interesting story, and if you want to share it without me having to pull it all out of you, I'm never upset about that. But I do want to kind of go in a little bit more into the book, just because obviously that's what we're going to talk about. But I know that the idea, this could be a headline without going into much detail, but the idea came from Carol Baskins. Is that right? That's pretty crazy.
yeah, it's kind of true in a bizarre way. So, growing up, I obviously knew my mom was attached in some way to the Holocaust. I remember now, I never talked about this on any previous podcast, but I was probably like 11 or 12, and we were down at the Jersey Shore. And I remember the documentary Shoah came out, which is like a 10-part documentary. Each episode is like 3 hours. Remember that, Carm? And
What was his name? Something like Saltzman or
I
something.
all I remember is,
French. I think it was French.
my dad, who's no longer with us, but always in our hearts, and may he rest in peace. He dragged me to this movie theater. I was, again, like maybe 10 or 11, and it's literally like a 40-hour documentary about the Holocaust. So, and it did, you see it in different episodes. But the reason I'm telling you that story is I knew my mom had a connection. We had a picture of a nun in our house growing up. My mom has a funny accent. My dad, by the way, is from born in Brooklyn, raised in the Bronx, and met my mom when he was a medical student in Geneva, where my mom was an undergrad. But I was in broadcast news. My last job was the national correspondent at Fox News, based out of DC. And I wanted to document my mother's story, and I'd always been sort of lazy about it. And in 1999, I had a weird summer job where I was working for the Michael Moore, who I'm not a giant, his work is great, not a giant fan of his, but that's another story. I won his ping pong tournament. He took my trophy back after he gave it to me because he needed it for the next season of his show, which I thought was awful. But that's a whole other story. And so, back then, Michael Moore did say to me, he knew about my mom, he said, you should go document it. And in 1999, I did. I traveled to Europe, where my grandmother lived, and I traveled to Israel and interviewed my mom's family, her good friends, and it all lives on YouTube. But then, I got caught up in my career, and then the pandemic hit. I had left Fox News, and I pitched this idea to have this podcast. We didn't start in true crime, and so I pitched the idea, and lo and behold, we had interesting, like, guests on, just like you, and one of them was Carol Baskin of Tiger King fame, of which Carmela was referring to it as the Lion King, which she was not doing intentionally, but Carol Baskin thought was hilarious. And lo and behold, Carol Baskin said, "Your mother is like my beloved tigers; she's an endangered species." And that really stuck with me, and that kind of compelled me and propelled me to write this book. So that's the genesis of it.
No, and I guess I want to ask you, in writing that book, was it kind of being able to put down on paper kind of the story, or was did you learn a lot? Just because I've interviewed quite a few people who've written books on the Holocaust, about their grandmothers, about their parents, but never anybody who actually was involved, other than my grandmother from a very different perspective. But they almost all have the same, the same story when it comes to once they decided to write the story, that's when they learned everything. Whether their parents had passed away and they finally were able to read their journals, they never talked about it growing up, or whether it was, they had to basically beg their grandparents to actually speak about it. So was this something that you grew up kind of knowing, or was it something that you learned through writing this book mostly?
Yeah. First of all, I get nervous if my mom's quiet for more than a minute, but, I knew bits and pieces. Like I had like a fragmented understanding. I'll give you an example. Like we argue about this, but I'm sure at one point, so my mother's hometown is a place called Subotica in the former Yugoslavia, now Serbia. And in that town, and at the end of the book, I actually go with my mother in real life. We go back to Serbia and I bring my wife and my kids. So then we've got, you know, three generations there. And my grandfather, my mother's father, he was gassed in Auschwitz, so there's no remains of him. He was then incinerated in an oven. So his name is just on a headstone in a cemetery in the middle of nowhere in the former Yugoslavia. But I remember a story. My mom said, and there's a synagogue there, which is, I believe, the second largest synagogue in Europe, and it's declared a historic landmark. It's unbelievably beautiful. Like, it's hard to describe. It looks like a gingerbread house. It doesn't look like a synagogue you'd see in America. And long story short, I remember my mom telling me one time, before the war, there was 8,000 people in my town, and after the war, there were
5,000.
So see, the numbers like change. Like, she said 8,080. After the war. Now
no,
my mom will say,
you made up the 8,000.
Say that again, Corn.
You made up the 8,000.
So that's like an example, like where things, it's kind of like a game of telephone. There was another point that I was just going to make, but I am.
They shaved my hair.
Oh, how did you look? She, mother knows. So another story was, so my mother was saved. And we can get into this if you'd like. She was saved by a non-Jewish, otherwise known as a righteous Gentile, a doctor whose name was Dr. Ivo Scherzer. I had no idea what his name was until I wrote the book. And he took my mom, with my grandmother's permission, to a Catholic school for boys. And there was a nun whose name was Matilda Gorchanich. And in my childhood, I grew up with a picture of her. I had no idea who she was, never knew her name. So when I wrote the book, I learned all these things.
Yeah, I guess I want to ask you, Camilla, what, I mean, I asked him about kind of just learning about the your story through the book. What was it like for you? I know that the book was just 20% kind of your story growing up, and the rest is kind of, I guess, life lessons. But what was it like for you to have Joel want to share this all, your story, and then also kind of your words of wisdom, so to speak?
It was the most unbelievable feeling. It was the best. And Joel, half seriously, half jokingly, says that I am not grateful enough that he wrote the book. But I am extremely grateful that he wrote the book, because it's just a wonderful feeling. It's sort of almost like, I don't want to be too dramatic, but in a certain way validates my existence on a certain level, on some other levels. You know, I was blessed with 8 grandchildren. I have only 2 children, but I have 8 grandchildren. So I was blessed by my 8 grandchildren. Then I have 2.
I gave you the only male grandson.
Yes, and Joel like does a lot for me. My other child is a daughter. She was the firstborn, and she had 5 daughters, my daughter. And Joel is like unbelievably proud that he had the only boy.
Your daughter's missing in action while I take care of you in your golden years, Carm.
My daughter lives in New Jersey. She's a wonderful, caring, very good person, but she's not here in Miami, and Joel is here in Miami. And my 3 little grandchildren, Joel's children, are here in Miami. But you know what? Can I just digress for a minute?
Sure, absolutely.
So lately there is a lot of demand for survivors, because there are so few of us, and the ones that are still alive are all children survivors, hidden children, not any of those that went through the concentration camps and had their numbers tattooed or something like that. They were all children at that time. So I was also not even 5 years old when I was unexpectedly, without any psychological preparation, I was just thrust into this nunnery one night. And it came very suddenly because my mother brought me over there. She didn't know in the morning that that's where she was going to bring me. So she couldn't prepare me psychologically where I was going. So all that was sudden. And then here is the digression. For some strange reason, somebody contacted us from the World War II Memorial Museum in New Orleans. I didn't even know that there was such a museum in New Orleans. There is a museum of World War II in New Orleans, and they literally sent somebody to my apartment where I'm sitting now, and they interviewed me. And just the other day, the young woman who interviewed me sent me a copy of the interview. Now, I did these interviews. I'm not going to exaggerate. I'm not going to throw out it's nothing like you 300 times, because until very recently, I didn't do this. It's only in the last few years that I do this, you know, talk to schools and talk to people about what happened to me. So this young woman sent me a copy of what she was, I'm going to get to the point that I tried to make, not soon, but I'll get to it. So she interviewed me for maybe an hour and a half. Okay. And in the very, very end of the interview, she asked me if I want to add anything else to the interview. And somehow, I don't know what inspired me, I never said that before ever like that. I said, yes, I would like to say that what happened between 1941 and 1945 in my life, it did not stop in 1945. I'm now 85. I was 85 in August, so we are now in February. So you do the math. I'm 85 and a half. And this World War II tragedy has had an impact on me as a person and on my psyche all this time, nonstop. And it probably changed my life, because I would have lived a different type of a life otherwise. But not only that it did it to me, but I think it did it to my son and daughter, my children, and he did it to my grandchildren. And my great-grandchildren are too small. But definitely my grandchildren are 28, 29, 30, and you can see the impact it had on them. And I wasn't one of these sad sack, bring them down and miserable person, but just my knowing what I went through and what we all went through at that time had an impact on them. So actually, the Holocaust is still having its impact on us. That was my point.
Well, we learn in true crime that there's no such thing as closure. You know, it's part of the fabric of who you are. And I got to say two things. Number one, Jackson is an incredible interviewer because he really listens. He does not interrupt like me. I'm very impressed. He's actually listening, which I always tell everyone's the most important trait. And the second thing, that I was going to bring up. Carm, once again, has slipped my mind. I'm wondering if I am losing my mind, or you have perfect recall, Carm.
It could be that it's a catchy thing, the senior moment.
Oh, yeah, I know what it is. So, I mean, Jackson, one of the things that I learned is that there is, like, generational trauma. I mean, I'm definitely much more anxious than a normal individual. I've definitely got elements of, like, OCD. And I'm not blaming it on my mother. It's just, like, when you are literally running from the Nazis and hiding in a school, my mother, by nature, because of that experience, is very paranoid. And I will give you a perfect example to illustrate what I am talking about. Over the last 2 months, I've had a neck issue. I'm 55, and I should not be having neck issues or memory issues. And on my podcast, I consider it a family, so I like to get advice, and that people are giving me advice. So long story short, I go to an orthopedist here in Miami, and Miami doctors can be shady, and I didn't like this guy. Lo and behold, it's called Jewish Geography. Carm tells me that her friend in the building, who's actually a relative's son, and she's like 90, so the son is like 60. He's an orthopedist. Fast forward, I go to him, and he's great. And he's like, you got to go see this other person. I got the MRI. I want you to go see a pain specialist, blah, 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 blah. The options are physical therapy or getting an injection or both into my neck. And Carm told me, and I quote, Joel, if you get that injection and you become a quadriplegic and you have to move yourself around by blowing into a contraption, I will never take care of you. I will never help you. It will be self-destructive. You will be an idiot. It's pretty much what she said. By the way, I recorded every conversation in our book. So there are a lot of expletives, not from me. My mother curses a lot. My children have learned most of their curse words from her. But I'm making light of something that I'm kind of trying to make a serious point about is now that she told me I could be a quadriplegic, I mean, I'm a 55-year-old man, and now I'm second guessing, like, do I get this shot? She's a very powerful influence in my life, and she's a very paranoid person. She's also an amazing mother and incredibly smart, incredibly loving. She's also incredibly tough on me. She expects a lot, and no matter what I do, I'm you know, like seeking her, like recognition. And, you know, she was joking about, you know, me wanting more adulation for the book. But it all stems from, I think, her experience in the Holocaust. Like, my dad was a super mellow guy. And I think that, although dad had anxiety, but I think a lot of this anxiety.
I don't think, Jackson, why cannot I see Jackson? Somehow, your face is covered by the...
He's completely clear, Carm.
Not to me.
It's called a microphone that he's speaking into. But we like, Carm, go ahead.
The sound is very clear, but his face is not visible to me.
She's hard on Jackson, too. See, no, Jackson, it's not just you.
May I say something? It's like, I think the taping is right above it. Maybe if I said, okay, this meeting is being recorded, and if I put okay, maybe it will go away.
Oh, boy. Here we go. Tech savvy, Carm. Carm,
oh,
getting
yes.
You.
Wow, it happened. I can see you now.
Go ahead, Carm.
I think the examples that Joel brought up are not the ones I referred to when I was talking to the World War II museum interviewer. I think, very frankly, the paranoia, which is true, I'm paranoid on the edges. You know, it didn't stop me from living my life and functioning in the world and so forth, but I never trust anything 100%. So I'm not proud of it, but this is how it is. Now, being Jewish is not exactly totally, totally easy, especially lately. Besides the Holocaust, I'm talking about, in addition to the Holocaust, what's going on. You know, my son's children go to a Jewish school, and I went there because of a little some celebration, And there are three police, not policemen, three guards with flak jackets and machine guns. And I'm not exaggerating. This is how it is in Miami Beach, Florida.
Yeah, by the way,
So
my daughter just asked why
she's
Kanye
almost
West,
11. She's almost.
no, the middle one. She asked why Kanye West hates Jews, and she said something like, "Why can't they just be nice and we'll be nice back?" So, it's coming from a 9-year-old. So, yay, if you're listening, and I know you do.
Yeah, he
We,
watches your podcast, I'm
yeah.
sure.
Jackson, I apologize. We've just Jackson has said like three words. I knew this was going to
No,
happen.
these are.
No, it's great. I don't just like you were mentioning earlier, I don't really have an ego with this podcast. If what needs to be said is said, then I'm fine with not talking too much, because oddly, my next two questions were about how that time has shaped your life, Carmela, and how it has shaped the next generation. So you actually answered my next question without me having to ask it. So that's kind of how that it's funny how that works. But I want to ask the next question, because it's almost funny that it's here, because I wasn't exactly sure how this interview would go, because I wanted to ask you guys about just the unique relationship that you guys have, and kind of the ribbing that you have. I thought I would have to ask that to get a little bit out of you, but it started from the beginning, so I don't. It's almost a silly question to ask now, but I
You
want you to
saw it
talk a
in
little.
action. Yeah.
Yeah, I want you guys to talk just a little bit about that relationship, because obviously, there's a lot to it, but it also just comes across to probably the public as kind of a. I mean, obviously, a little bit of a humorous thing. It's kind of fun to listen to.
Yeah, that they probably think we're insane, but I
But
mean, it.
I don't think we, I don't think we do
Carm,
it.
let me say my 2 cents, and then I'll let you jump in
All
a
right.
long time. So people accused us when we first started our podcast of it being shtick, which is like a Yiddish word for made up. If you had a camera on us, it is 1,000 times worse when we're not on camera. We actually are, because that's when Carmela starts hurling like
No,
curse
like we
words.
have a new rule that I established very, very
Carm
recently.
drops F-bombs like Joe Rogan. I can.
I established a new rule very recently. For some reason, Joel, who is between you and me, unbelievably creative and a very good writer and talented in this area, loves to complain to me. For don't ask me, we never were psychoanalyzed or
We're not a normal, no mother and son should
So
be like
anyway,
this
so
close.
I
It's very
instituted a
unhealthy.
new rule that after 9 p.m. he cannot complain. So at 8:51 he said something like, I forget, that sounded like he was going to complain about something. I said, speak fast, because you have only 9 minutes to complain before 9 o'clock.
Great. That's how I'm going to, if I go before you, Karma, I'll be remembered as a complainer. So.
Never. You're going to be remembered as a creative, great, very loving, great son.
We're real. It's a sad, like, admission right now, but we really are not normal. I mean, truly, we are not normal. We're like, well, I think we're good people and we're well intentioned, but I don't think any mother and son should have this sort of relationship. There's a little more context. My mother did lose, and I write about this in the book, a child when he was young. He was 2 years older than me. And in the writing of this book, she loses my father, her husband, and we argue about what's more important, a husband or a father. But she was married to him for 63 years. So the book, and my mom, I say this, I got to see her survive in real time. And when I asked her, when you ask her, she'll tell you that the hardest thing in her life has been the loss of my dad. It wasn't the Holocaust, it wasn't the loss
I was
of a
married
son.
to him for 63 years.
Yeah. But
63.
Carm goes to the other extreme. Like, she
Yeah, I
doesn't
go
want to
to the
be,
other. That's
she
true.
doesn't want to be a victim. So, like, I had literally never been to my brother's cemetery, either has she, since probably 1970, too. Well, like a lot of parents, bereaved parents, they can't explain it. They can't understand that.
Let me. You don't have to understand it, but I'll see where I want to say where I'm coming from. My father was taken when I was almost like 1 month before my fifth birthday. He was taken on a train to, I don't know if you heard of you probably did, Auschwitz, the concentration camp in Poland, and he was gassed, okay, killed.
Carmen, this guy is an Indiana University graduate, one of the best schools in the country. He's heard of Auschwitz.
Okay, I am not talking down to you, but I don't know how much, you know.
Well, it is sad, because, I mean, Jackson is substantially younger than you and I, and the new generation. I don't know.
He's sophisticated.
But Carm, go ahead. Why?
Anyway, so he never had a grave. Then I moved from Yugoslavia to Switzerland. I didn't have any of my relatives' graves. I wasn't used to. There is a Jewish tradition to go every year before the Jewish New Year to go to the cemetery. I had no tradition like that. I don't, even here now, my husband is buried in New Jersey, and I have zero feeling that if I go there, I'm closer to him than if I'm sitting in my apartment in Miami, or that I'm further. For me, going to the grave is an alien thing, a strange and alien thing. Now, I have a half-sister, and she goes to the cemetery like there is no tomorrow. Because she already had a father and a mother, and they were all in the same place. And she feels, you know, she's a very emotional person. She feels very close, and she's very happy there.
I don't want to get super morbid, but it was at my dad's funeral where he was buried.
All right, Roy. Okay, Joel.
This is where Carm sees. She doesn't like to be vulnerable, so I do this part. I kind of do on purpose.
On purpose, you see.
So my brother, whose name was Abraham, and they called him Rami for short, he doesn't have like a headstone that stands up. It's embedded into the ground. It's like literally on top of the grass, like screwed in. It doesn't stand up. And when my father was buried, I didn't even know. I said, "Is he buried here too?" Meaning my brother. And I am not joking when I say within 10 seconds of that question, I was physically standing on his headstone because it was right next to my dad. It was very weird. And I'd never seen it. I have pictures of it. I'd never seen it. This is what Carm has to do to survive. She just never dwells. I pretty much just dwell on the negative. She never does. Interesting. I don't know why. It's interesting.
No, I never dwell. If I can help it, I don't dwell on the negative. You know, to be 85 and dwell on the negative, that's a difficult little baggage to carry, you know, at 85. And all around me, people, literally, I'm not exaggerating, two women that I've been pretty close to, both of their husbands are literally dying.
We like to lift everybody up. We talk true crime and
no,
the Holocaust.
No, but I'm saying to you that I cannot go there. I'm not going there. Tomorrow night I have tickets to go to a stand-up comic.
I should have been in therapy from the age of two. What do you mean? You're going to see a stand-up comic tomorrow?
Tomorrow. Kentucky. She's from Kentucky, and she's at the JCC.
What's her name?
Aliyah something. I don't know. I have it written here.
I'm taking you to a comedy show on Monday night, by the way.
I'm really looking forward to it. Too bad you didn't tell me before so I could be happy for a longer time.
There you go.
Too bad you didn't tell before.
Yeah, no, but he mentioned that we are going, but he didn't give me the date.
Jackson, we got to be the weirdest couple.
Don't feel so bad.
Are we the oddest couple that you've ever had on the show in the 300 episodes?
Jackson, I was a quote therapist. I have a master's in social work and a few additional courses. And my husband was a psychiatrist. We had two offices and a joint waiting room. And I heard more stories that you heard. You know what I mean? More than 300 stories.
I'm sure.
And sometimes when people were suicidal and so forth, it wasn't fun. But I lived through it. I had this gift. A person would come in and tell me a horrible story for like 50 minutes. And then the next person who comes in, I would manage to push that person out of my thoughts and concentrate on the new person who walked in. So that was like
By the way, it was like 20 years later that I found out that like 90% of their patients were my friend's parents in town. We came from a small town, so that was even more interesting. But that's the other thing. I grew up the son of a psychiatrist. Everyone says, oh, you must be crazy. And then I'm like, well, my mom's also a Holocaust survivor. And they were like, oh, there was no hope for you.
Yeah, so like he's beyond the pale. No.
By the way, I'm working on a second book with Karm called Surviving the Psychiatrist about my dad. And I'm going to do that. My dad had a very interesting take on life, very non-traditional. At one point early in his career, he couldn't do it.
A very humanist.
Number one, he forgot. He wouldn't label anyone. He would not call them depressive or he just didn't label people, and he didn't give medication. At one point,
he didn't.
He had to pivot from that because pharmaceuticals stuff took over. But I digress.
Yeah, well,
let's try to let Jackson speak, Joel. Resist temptation.
Well, a moment of levity from a lot of heavy stuff that you just mentioned. And that is, you know, we keep talking about in 300 episodes that I've done. I got to tell you, something you said earlier, Carmela, is probably one of my favorite quotes in 300 episodes. You said, I've got a point. I'm not getting to it soon, but I'll get to it. I like that. I've never had anyone say anything quite like that. So
she always says, let me make the short story long. She says, yeah. There are a lot of things that my mom says, and I write about this in a book, that I'm so, first of all, I don't hear my mom's accent, but everyone else does. But for some reason, like we would drive around, and when we would get like to inside the garage, she would say, thank you for flying Ozark Airlines, which I know you definitely never heard of, and I definitely never heard of. Then when Billy Crystal was like a big thing, she would say, you look marvelous. Like,
darling, you look marvelous.
Yeah, like she's got a lot of really weird things that I don't even react to, but people, like, and this is a perfect example, like I didn't even notice it, but you are saying it's one of the funnier things that you've heard. So it's a lot of that from Carm.
Yeah.
I kill down a lot.
Yeah. I say that, you know, that funny thing to ask you, I guess one of the more, you know, obviously we're talking about the Holocaust, so that's pretty deep, but maybe a harder question to ask you guys, and that you just talked about your relationship and kind of the uniqueness of it. We talked about how the Holocaust has shaped your life. How do you think that relationship has shaped your life and shaped your own relationships? I mean, I'm just thinking with you, Joel, with, you know, your own wife, I mean, to have a relationship so close with your mom, it takes a very confident, strong person to be able to deal with that, honestly.
Yeah. She puts up with a lot. Honestly, that's no one's ever made that point, at least publicly, and I appreciate it because I guess I'm guilty slightly of being a mama's boy. No, I mean, my mom and I, this is not normal. I don't want anyone, it's like, you know, like when the show Jackass was on and they're like, don't try this at home. That's like our relationship. Like it's a very unique relationship. And you're right. Like my wife puts up with me and my mom, which takes, like you said, a very strong woman.
She's a very strong, very bright.
She is very bright. She's tough.
Very smart person.
You know, what's interesting is I have three kids.
Joel always cries that I team up with her against him.
Well, that's true. But Jackson, I have three kids, and they range in age from 5, soon to be 11. I started very young. However, I did marry
not five. Woman. It's almost 5 and a half.
Five.
He's 5 and a half.
Yeah. But my point is, I don't think you could go anywhere in this world right now, literally, and find a 5-year-old child who's grandmother, not great-grandmother or great-great-grandmother, but whose grandmother, one generation removed, is a Holocaust survivor. I bet you he's the only one, because it's such, because I had kids very late, and, you know, it just doesn't, like, the math doesn't. I'd be shocked to find another person that, and my mom was younger than he was, which blows my mind, when she was hidden in a Catholic school. Literally 4 and a half, and my son is now 5 and a half. So she was a year younger. My mom was one month
before my fifth birthday, and I was a very little old lady at that time because I was with adults and no other children, and everybody was like taking care of me.
Yeah. On a somewhat serious note, you know, I always say I was in broadcast news for many years. I started it, just so people don't say, oh, you were a Fox News guy. I started my career at MSNBC, like polar opposites, as a producer. But I do say that this is the most important story that I've ever reported on, which is documenting my mother's story. But I always say this too to my community at Surviving the Survivor, which is it will certainly change how you look at life, this book. That is for sure. It's you can get it on Amazon, anywhere you buy books, but it'll certainly, I can guarantee you that once, I mean, you'll probably think we're still crazy, but it will affect how you see things for sure.
You see, I don't consider us crazy. Mm. And this is after 40 years of, you know, meeting up with a lot of crazy people in my profession. I consider us a little strange, a little out of the ordinary, maybe a little eccentric, maybe a little bit more enmeshed than most. But, you know, my husband, who was a psychiatrist, he said, you know, how can you tell if somebody really has emotional problems? Do you know how, Jackson, one of the definitions?
Tell me. If they still listen to their mother at 55.
No. One of the definitions is when they cannot hold a job.
Mm-hmm. Mm, that's,
you know, when they are not functioning in the world.
You know, I wonder about weird things, Jackson. And again, we're cutting them off. But I took my mom to see, I'm a stand-up comedy fan. I took my mom to see Jerry Seinfeld a few weeks ago. And he was actually hilarious. I wasn't expecting him to be as funny as he was.
He was funny.
He was very funny. But I said to my mom, do you think his mother, like, still, like, the guy's worth $800 million, had one of the most, like, unbelievable shows, done everything. And I was like, do you think his mother still yells at him? I then found out she died 11 years ago, but hypothetically. And she said, 100%. Like, you never stop being a mother. Like, she was, you know, up until the day she died, she's giving him advice, telling him she doesn't like his white shoes. Why are you wearing white shoes? How come you're not wearing a suit when you're in front of so many people? Blah, blah. You know, like, there's a stereotype about Jewish mothers, I guess, but I think it's all mothers that they nag their kids, you know,
Well, you know, that stereotype was very, very, very strong at one time. Then it kind of weakened. I think it's because of woman's lib. There was less pinned on us, you know, that we are guilty of whatever.
I think anyone listening to this is going to be like, these are the two most obnoxious people I've ever heard. Like, they didn't let this host ask a single question and just talked about themselves. Who are these people? I never want to hear from them again. It's like, I don't understand why anyone watches.
I have an idea, Joel.
By the way, my podcast is live every day on YouTube at 5 p.m. or 7 p.m. That is our big platform. 135,000 subscribers. We get about 2 to 3 million views a month, and we're anywhere you listen to podcasts.
Let's do this. Let's try to confuse the enemy, Joel, and resist. Look at your watch, and the last 10 minutes of the interview.
His show's only 45 minutes. We're over time, but it's okay.
Oh. Too bad, because I was going to suggest that we let you speak.
Well, what I was going to ask you, obviously, I enjoy listening to you guys. People hear me speak plenty, so I don't mind that at all. But I wanted to be, and I asked you that beforehand, but I didn't actually get an answer. So I wanted to be cognizant of your time. Do you only have 10 more minutes? I mean, I can let you guys speak as much as you want, but I do want to make sure that we
Whatever you need, we're here. We can stay longer.
The 45 minutes is not a hard stop. I mean, I've done everything from 20 minutes to 2 hours. Let's keep it a little less than that. But I want to ask you. Let's kind of wrap up the part with the book, and just kind of asking you what you hope people gain from it. You already talked about that a little bit, but just as a specific question, what do you want people to ultimately gain from reading the book?
I'm going to flip that onto my mom. I'll give you a short answer. You know, my mom is a walking, breathing, living piece of history with a lot of knowledge and also a lot of wisdom because of not only the Holocaust, but because years lived, because she was a therapist and you heard her talk about, you know, she was a person and still is who helps people with problems. She suffered the loss of a child. And I just think like we all, you know, we're all going to lose a parent. And by the way, I'm not sure how I'm going to exist when harmed. I kind of hope it happens to me first. But what I really hope they get out of it is just her wisdom and, you know, some understanding and memory of her story. You know, the war, my mom is very pro-Israel, as you would imagine. And the war started in Israel during the editing process of this book. So I also put in some of her thoughts about that. And I just want people to take away, you know what, she gives me a lot of strength. And I think if you read the book, you kind of get that through osmosis. Carm, what do you want people to get out of it?
Are you going to interrupt me?
No, but I've never heard you answer this, so I'm curious.
Well, I'll answer it. You know, today we got a text, somebody who teaches in the school of one of my, is the teacher of one of my grandchildren, and she was called, like last time, I'll get to the point. They asked her to go for jury duty, and she said she hopes when her time comes in the tribunal that she hopes they won't choose her, but she had a great day reading our book and laughing out loud. The book is also, believe it or not, we were joking about this, it's a book about the Holocaust. It's a funny book on top of it. It's funny. He writes very well. He has a great sense of humor, and he gets me. He gets the funniness of the stories. And what the book consists of is that he interviews me. He took his phone and taped our conversation, and then he wrote the book. But
this part is true. I must interrupt because you told me not to interrupt.
Also, the book is sort of, the message of the book is what my message is about life, that in spite of everything, I'm an optimist. I am positive. I think we can be good. We can be nice. We can create. We are, you know, there is such, I'm a positive person. He will admit it that I'm a positive person.
Very positive.
Annoyingly positive person.
Yeah, annoyingly positive. I was just going to say, you know, it's funny because Carm talks about this interview she just did. There's nothing Carm likes more than to watch herself. Like the minute a podcast is over, she's watching it. I literally, the way the book was written is I would record conversations with my mother and kind of get like the skeleton of a chapter, and then I would fill it out with my own, you know, knowledge, understanding, my own feelings, my own thoughts. True story. I never rewrote a word of this book. I just wrote it. It was an outer body experience. I went to this weird hipster cafe in Miami. I put on headphones. I'm not a big music guy, but I would listen to like Johnny Cash and random weird country music. I have no idea why. And I just sat there and wrote, and it's like a 307 page book. Never went back and rewrote it and never read it since then. And I probably won't till I'm like 90. I don't know why. It makes me like weird and uncomfortable. But Carm, how many times have you read the book about you?
Well, I listened. We also have the audio book. And the audio book is pretty funny because I do it with Joel. I do my parts, he does his parts. And while the book has all the curse words, the audiobook I cleaned up. Whenever there was the word whatever, I called it feces, and I skipped some four-letter words, and it's a very kind of very pure, clean book.
The audio engineer had to listen to us. It took us like, I don't know,
He
40
had a
hours or
good
something.
time. What was his
He
name?
Burler,
Burler,
Burler. He
Burler.
loved my mom, but we would literally get to, we were reading the book and the F-bomb would come up and she's like, "I did not say this." And I'm like, "I have it recorded on a phone. Like you said it." And then she would take 10 minutes to think of another word. So it was like a really,
Anyway, I
I'm
read
not
the
sure
book.
how I'm still around, like the stress that I've endured just in the last couple of years. But anyway, it's I think it's an important story. I'll leave it there.
But
So many times have you read it?
I personally,
Yeah.
Like 1,000.
probably I read it since it came out in May. Probably I read it twice, but it's absolutely true. I watch myself and
And never criticize. Like I'm my worst critic. My mom's like, "I am
I always say
fantastic."
I was great. I was
Jackson, the
absolutely.
minute we get off, she's gonna say, "Where do I find this, Joel? I need a link," and I'll have to say it goes through an edit
Oh,
process. I'm
but
gonna have to
do
ask,
you
but
know
Jackson, just make
Jackson?
sure you email me a link because she'll be listening to it.
Jackson, do you know
She'll be
what
your biggest promoter.
you know
I
what Jackson?
will.
You know
Every
what?
old Jewish lady at her condo in Miami Beach will be listening to "Not in a Huff."
I will absolutely be doing that. Yeah. What were you gonna say?
No, that you have to understand. One of the, I think it was Hillel, one of the sages said that if I'm not for myself, who will be? And
Yeah.
if I'm only for myself, who am I? You know, not very, if I don't care about. But I certainly, I have no talents. I cannot sing. I cannot write. I cannot dance. I am uncoordinated. Everything else, but I have a good self-image.
That's important. That's really, really important for sure. And you've mentioned this World War II museum in New Orleans several times. I don't know whether you still do a lot of traveling, but that thing is, if it's all of interest to you, it's huge. I mean, it's like three city blocks. It's not just a little museum. It is quite the thing.
Are you talking about the, I think it's called the Museum of like
World
Jewish.
War II
There's a war.
in
Yeah,
New
the World
Orleans.
War II Museum is in New Orleans. There's a reason for it. It's where the some tank was invented, and that's why they put it there. But no, it's three city blocks. It's the World War II Museum for the entire United States. It's huge.
I
You
did not
want to
know
hear
that.
something cute? This will illustrate what kind of a person I am. So
Yeah.
after this young woman interviewed me, I said to her, let's go down and have lunch. It's already lunchtime. She traveled specially from New Orleans to interview me, okay, for some strange reason, because they needed more people and she got my name and so forth for the inventory or whatever. Anyway, we went downstairs. We had a lovely lunch and I really liked her. And we started to talk about very personal things. And I met her like 2 hours before and she opened up. And I really liked her. And so I called her up recently and I advised her on dating. And now I have to call her back.
How old is she?
And she's in her 30s. And anyway, he never met her. He doesn't know who I'm talking about. I'm not revealing.
Jackson, I see a wedding band on your hand, but if you have any friends, let Carm know. Maybe there's a
Yeah,
match.
if anybody needs advice about marriage or anything, call free of charge.
By the way, you said if Carm still travels, she is planning. She's going to it. She's
I
she
drive. It's a
drives. She's going to
miracle
Israel
that I
on
drive.
a 12-hour flight in March, when this war could flare up. I'm not going to let her go if there's bombs flying. But Carm, we did a whole book tour for Surviving the Survivor.
Yeah, we went to Toronto, we
Yeah,
went to New York, we went to Philadelphia, we went
and
to
she went
Boston.
everywhere with me, and she had like way more energy than me. I was knocked out. It's the energy she has. I definitely did not inherit that.
Yeah. Well, it then, I mean, you, if it's at all of interest to you, the that museum in New Orleans you did a piece for is quite the museum. They have a whole like 3D interactive experience. It's actually narrated by Tom Hanks. It's an interesting thing.
So it's not a Holocaust museum, it's a World War II museum.
It's not a Holocaust museum, it's a
nothing
World War II
to do with
museum.
the Holocaust, except for some reason they decided to interview about the Holocaust too. I don't know why, but they did. And I don't even know where they got. The only reason I mentioned it to you because
Carm, how come you didn't get my book in that bookshop at the museum? You're gonna call need to
I
call her.
did
By the
what?
way, Carm's the only person in history to sign a book she never wrote. She signs every book.
Yeah, I signed the books.
Every
That's
book.
good. That's I like. Well, it's
Never
about you.
wrote
You
a
should.
word. She never wrote a
You
word.
should.
She's
You. It's about you, right? Yeah.
anyway.
Oddly, in Indiana, there's a really powerful Holocaust museum. She just recently passed away, but Eva Kaur moved to Indiana. I don't know if you know who she is. She was a twin, so she was part of the Mengele experiments. So every month she would come to her own museum. I went a few times and give a conversation. But no, there's a really, and it's not very big, but there's a
What
pretty powerful
town is
Holocaust
it?
museum here.
What city?
Actually, with you're in Champaign, you were closer to it than I am. It's in Terre Haute, which is
Terre
right on the border of Indiana and Illinois.
Illinois.
So
Wow. Carm,
let's move. Go ahead.
I'd like to ask Carm some trivia. Who is from French Lick, Indiana, Carm?
French Lick, Indiana?
Yeah.
No.
I'll give you a hint. He's one of the greatest basketball players ever.
All right, Joel, now you are want to prove I don't know anything about
And
sport.
he used to pra I'll give you a more hint. He used to practice. I went to Brandeis University. He used to practice in our gym.
Joel, could we just try to
Larry Bird. Those were days that you were watching hoops. Larry Bird. He's the legend
I
of
thought he was in
Indiana.
Boston.
There's nothing bigger than basketball.
Was he in
Yeah,
Boston?
but he's from Indiana. He played for the Boston Celtics.
Oh, I thought he was a real Boston person.
By the way, Carm called the Philadelphia Eagles Super Bowl win. I talked to her. I asked for her prediction, and she called. She didn't know whether it was football or what sport, but she called Philadelphia.
It's good. And if you want, if you want to do a road trip to Terre Haute, go see the Candles Holocaust Museum. She's got a hologram of herself there now. And because Larry Bird actually went to Indiana State, which is in Terre Haute, there's a Larry M Bird Museum that just opened like 6 months ago there. So you can
Carm,
do
we
it
gotta
all at once.
go. Gotta go.
May
Come
I
on.
say something to you?
Sure.
The same way that I don't go to cemeteries that much, I don't go to Holocaust museums that much.
Yeah.
Jackson,
Yeah.
I'll tell you a really funny story in 3 seconds. So I went to Brandeis University, which is Waltham, Mass, and this is when the Celtics were. This is when basketball was really basketball. I mean, this was like Bird versus Magic Johnson, and I wasn't like a cool jock, but I would hang out with the soccer team, and the baseball team, and those guys, and they knew where Larry lived, and they would go at like 2, 3 in the morning and grab all his garbage and then bring it back to the dorm rooms, and they would find like the Larry Bird's toothpaste or an old sneaker from like if it was today, they'd be selling it all on eBay. eBay didn't exist, but they would just like keep it as keepsakes. So if Larry's listening, he should know that his old toothpaste, I don't even know what you call that, toothpaste tube
How
and
old
or
is he now? 70?
now he's in his 60s.
Late 60s. He may be pushing 70. He's in that age. I guarantee you he's not listening. I definitely given I've talked about him before. I've met him a few times. He actually was the Pacers coach for a while, and then he was their president for 20 years. He's not the friendliest of guys. He's not he doesn't
No.
have that Hoosier hospitality.
Yeah, he's a little like curmudgeon-y for sure.
Yeah.
But he is definitely one of the best to ever do it.
Oh, absolutely, for sure. Let's get into your podcast. I like the tagline. You already mentioned it. Best guest in crime. That's obviously a pretty lofty thing. This is obviously not a true crime podcast, but we dabble in a lot of different things. And I'd like to say when I do dabble in true crime, I've had some pretty amazing guests. So you consistently have really, really awesome ones, but I don't know who your guests have been, but some of the cool people I've been able to speak with, I talked to Amanda Knox. I talked to Dave Riker, who caught the Green River Killer. I talked to Dr. Henry Lee, who is the criminal pathologist for in the JonBenet Ramsey case, and Drew Peterson. So I've had some interesting true crime people on, but you consistently day in and day out have some really, really amazing guests. So I want you to kind of just talk about the podcast and maybe highlight some guests if that's even possible with as many as you've had.
Yeah, for sure. I'm also, as much as we kid around, I'm watching Carmelo wilt before my eyes. We got to
I was just going to say asleep before he starts that I am semi-retired from the podcast. When we started during COVID in 2021, we did what you are doing now. We did interesting people and interesting stories. And both of us love those types of things, you know, meeting new people, finding their stories. So we did that. But once he pivoted to true crime, I come on a few times as a psychology expert, you know, analyzing the people and their behavior.
You're the matriarch of the show, and I don't know how interesting.
Yeah, and people respond very nicely to me, you know. But I don't.
Carm, this isn't about you. This is about
it on an ongoing basis. So I'm not going to have any comments about the true crime story.
Carm's favorite line to me is, "Joe, this is not about you." And she's making this about. He just asked about the best guest, not your role in the show, Carm. So I will answer. She's miffed. So
well, hold on. I'm gonna stop you for a second there too. Just because you talked about best guests, and you talked about how it used to be with interesting people. You know, looking at some of your old interviews when it was kind of that. The one that I and reaches out to, I guess that is the Holocaust area too. The one that I am definitely a little jealous of is I know that you had I don't even know how to exactly pronounce it, but Ben Ferencz on.
Yeah.
When I first started this podcast, you know, I was in contact with his people when he was 102. We went back and forth for a little while. Then he turned 103 and they came back and said, you know, he decided he's 103 that he said everything that he wants to say and he's going to let somebody else talk now. So we never got it booked. So that was a really special thing that you guys did then.
Yeah, that was incredible. For those who do not know, Ben Ferencz is like 4'9" in real life, and he's since passed, but he was the youngest prosecutor during the Nuremberg trials. He was the oldest living prosecutor at the end of his life from that trial. No one else had survived as long as him, but he had a slogan. It's funny because just yesterday, my wife, I have his business card and it's signed, and on his card was law, not war. And my wife like yelled from the bathroom, like, "Whoa, I didn't know you had this thing signed." But most people don't know who he is, but he made a real difference in the world. He prosecuted Nazis and you know, gave them the
famous top Nazis.
Yeah, famous top.
And Jackson knew about him.
Yeah, gave him the proper
soon. If you continue like this, you'll become an honorary Jew.
So but back to your best guest question. I mean, these are big names that you're throwing out there, really big names. But I sort of, everything I do in life's by accident. I became a news reporter by accident, all this stuff. I became a podcaster by accident. But I accidentally kind of created a niche within true crime. And I'm one of the only ones, I think, to kind of do a live nightly true crime talk show about the biggest cases in the country. So if you're old enough to remember Larry King, and Larry King, in my opinion, is a legend. I really thought he was great because he was concise and to the point, unlike me. He wasn't like the smartest human being alive at the time, but he would ask very pointed questions very simply, which is a talent. Anyway, so every night at either 5 or 7, I host a live show on YouTube at Surviving the Survivor. And we cover like the biggest cases. And so, you know, the big names that we've had, Nancy Grace, most people know, Vinnie Politan's a lead anchor at Court TV. And it just runs the gamut. Someone that people who are not in the space might not know, but she is a literal living legend, is Dr. Ann Burgess, who's a very famous criminal profiler, who's older than my mother, still teaches full-time at Boston College. There was just a Hulu documentary, which is great, about her called Mastermind. And if you ever saw the show Mindhunter on Netflix, it is based on her career and her life. And now we've got, you know, we have Mark Garagos on somewhat frequently when, you know, he's now kind of representing the Menendez brothers. Incidentally, I grew up with Lyle and Eric playing tennis, which is a whole other story because they're actually from New Jersey. But so we have a very high caliber, but, you know, criminal defense attorneys, and then just interesting people you meet along the way. One of them is Kerry Rawson, who is the daughter of the BTK serial killer from Wichita, Kansas. And she and I were very close. I still, you know, stay in touch with her. But during this Brian Koberger case, the guy accused of murdering four students in Idaho, she was kind of very public with that and was being asked a lot of questions in relation to that case. And so we get like very interesting perspectives.
And you know, like many other things in America, there is a whole community of people who are into true crime. So there is even a Crime-a-con. Did you know that?
I did, yeah.
We went to one.
Carm, I just heard that the next CrimeCon, the host hotels already sold out, which is making me crazy. But yeah, we're there. We're at CrimeCon every year. This year, they're actually expecting, I think, 10,000 people in Denver.
Yeah, there's a whole world around true crime. That's for sure. Yeah. No, I mean, I want to kind of be cognizant of your time. You guys have been so gracious with it. In wrapping up, before I have you just shout out all your connection points, I want to kind of end it just in, you know, this is a very unique thing that you guys have both done when it comes to creating that podcast, when it comes to the book. What's it been like? I know you guys have, I'm sure you don't just develop this interesting relationship, you know, and I'm sure your whole life you guys have had the relationship that you have, but what has it been like in these last 5+ years, you know, you just talked about a book tour. You talked about interviewing all these interesting people. I mean, I guess I want to start with Carmela if I can. You know, it sounds like probably you were over 80 when all of this started. So what's it like, just this kind of resurgence of interest in your story and then just sharing the platform with your son?
I think that we have a lot of similar personalities in the sense that we are really people, into people, you know, we are not the mountain climbers or sitting by the ocean and watching the waves. We interact with people all the time. And I think we have the same type of humor. And because we have known each other for so long, we kind of have a lot of shortcut on each other's thinking. Before he opens his mouth, I know what he will say next sometimes. You know, so we have a lot of, and honestly, I'm the same way with my daughter-in-law. Also, I know where she's at and what's going on, you know, mentally with her.
By the way, Carm is in the true crime space, is sort of legendary in her own right. She's got kind of a cult of personality. People watch the show because of her. She can do no wrong.
I can do no right. I'm the poor little old lady and Joel is the mean son.
Yeah, and by the way, my wife is part of the show. She's known as the COE, the chief of everything. And people are constantly defending her and my mother. And it's like, you know, true crime is predominantly women. It's like 82% women. You know, with YouTube analytics, you can break things down. And it's 82% women. So, but what can I tell you? I've made Carm a celebrity. I think I write this in a book. Rodney Dangerfield didn't become famous until his like 60s. And now Carm is experiencing celebrity in her 80s for the first time. And she's loving every minute of it.
Every minute of it. But I'm also cognizant of the fact that, you know, the world is fickle. If I buy the dust, they may remember me for another couple of months. So I'm trying to enjoy it while I'm here.
That's longer than most.
Yeah, longer. Anyway, yeah, the people are very, very, very nice. His community is very, very nice. Very nice people.
That's good. It sounds
135,000 of them.
Yeah, that's nothing to sneeze at for sure. So yeah, I mean this you've already kind of given your two cents with it, Joel, but I mean what's it like? I guess I'm gonna flip it a little bit with the question to you. What's it like that your a little bit of your popularity is tied to your mother here?
Yeah, it's funny you bring that up. So I was invited to the Tucson Festival of Books. I'm going to be there in March. And I told Carm to come with me. And she's like, I'm not flying to, Phoenix to then go to, you can't get a direct flight to Tucson. So long story short, I'm going solo. But, I'm going to be doing a talk at the Holocaust Museum in Tucson. And the JCC reached out. So we were on this email today, long story short. I said to them, look, you don't want me. Like, the real star of this show always is Carm. So this happened in L.A. We went to L.A. where my wife is from. So Carm couldn't make the trip, and we put her up on a giant monitor, and she was part of the conversation via Zoom. So I suggested to the Tucson people that we put Carm up because no one wants to hear me. Everyone's always really interested. And one of the really strange things, but interesting, is that apparently it's a thing in Judaism to be blessed by a Holocaust survivor. And Carm lives in, she lives in a nice building in Miami Beach, but it's kind of what you imagine. It's women in their 80s who have very dark tans, and they come up to her and wrinkled, pruny skin. And they come up to her and they're like, I heard you're a survivor. Could you bless me? And Carm's like the Pope. It's crazy. She'll be like, I have blessed you. What do you say to them, Carm?
I say you're blessed.
Carm loves it. It's kind of funny.
No, first, I was surrounded by my granddaughters. We were sitting around the pool. And
By the way, when it's time to wrap the show, this is when Carm will go another 25 minutes. But go ahead.
Yeah, we can't say goodbye. It's very painful to say goodbye. But anyway, I was sitting there with my granddaughters. I told you I have five. I was sitting around with three or so. And suddenly a woman came over and she said, I heard that you are a survivor of the Holocaust. Could you give me a blessing? My daughter-in-law is expecting twins and I want them to be healthy. So I said, I bless you and I bless the twins. Cracking up.
I said it earlier. I have no idea why. Well, the podcast I get because we have these amazing guests every night.
Joel, and don't the book is no, no but, false modesty, Joel. Yes, they like
I'm curious that anyone who's listening to this, please email me if I can give it out. SurvivingTheSurvivor@gmail.com and let me know if this is the most abnormal interview you've ever heard. I will not be offended. I'm just curious what you guys say. Because I'm just putting myself in there. If I'm in, like, Indiana, and people are listening to it all over, but if I'm someone who's not accustomed to you and I, and I'm listening to this, I'm like, these are the two weirdest people I've ever met. And
I'd like to think my listener base is friendlier than that. So I hope you get zero emails telling you that you guys are weird. I don't want that to happen.
I'll let you know, Jackson.
Please do.
I tell you, I could handle it because weird is good. But in any case, I enjoyed talking to you, and I wish you good luck for the future. You see, I'm giving the blessing. And
I will take it.
Good. Do you have children?
I do not. No, I do not have children.
Okay. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, that's taking us down a totally different road. I don't think we'll travel. But I really appreciate both of y'all's time. Please, if you would, shout out all your connection points. Joel, I think this is your time to shine about the book, how people are going to find it, how people find your podcast. Carmela, this is your time to say that you're starting your own podcast without Joel, that we can share that as well.
Yeah. So,
No. I think that the truth of the matter is that Joel has, I think you do a false modesty thing, because the ladies just love you, Joel. That's the truth.
LL Cool J, you know what that stands
The
for, right? Ladies love
82%
Cool
of
J.
the women
I don't
like
know how
Joel very much.
I don't know how true
Yeah,
that
they know
is.
he's not available because he is married with three children, but
Carm,
the ladies
you're making
get
me
a kick
blush,
out
Carm.
of him.
Yeah. So
Yeah,
Carm will go on and on and on now, right? What
I
was the
think
next?
he's the one who is running the show. If he's not there for one night, it's different audience already. You know,
Jackson. Whenever
he's
we try
one.
to wrap the show and she's on, I'm not
No,
kidding.
I
It's
tell
like
you, I'll
30
call
extra.
you a
You're seeing
kick,
it right now.
and
You're
then
seeing it
I'll
right now.
shut up.
Yeah. So, number one, thank you so much for having us on. Really appreciate it. Number two, I got to say, Jackson's one of the better interviewers I've ever seen. And I mean that. He listens, which I don't do, but he's listening and then asking very smart follow-up questions. So kudos to you. Were you, I feel like you were a sports journalist in college. Like, did you cover sports for the paper?
I did not know.
Yeah. I feel like I don't know. I have this picture of you doing that. Anyway, the podcast is called Surviving the Survivor. You can follow us on Instagram at Surviving the Survivor, and I'll make it easy on you. The book is called Surviving the Survivor. So you don't have a lot to remember there. The book is available anywhere books are sold. You can ask your bookstore to order it if you can't do it on Amazon. And the podcast, again, Surviving the Survivor, and it is on YouTube. That's a big platform, but you can listen to it anywhere you listen to podcasts. And we actually just launched a second channel. So that, and I'll just tell you about it super quick. So again, our tagline is best guess in true crime, which I spent a lot. By the way, shout out to Steve Cohen, who books our guests. He's a friend of mine from Fox days. He's a experienced network producer, and he's amazing at kind of connecting us and getting us the right people. But we are start because we have so many amazing guests. Some of them have actually come up to us and said, you know, I have a private investigation firm, or I'm a full-time criminal defense attorney, but I love what you're doing, and I would like to do something. So I had this idea, and we launched about 2 weeks ago a second channel called STS True Crime Talk. True Crime Talk, and it's hashtag best talk in true crime. True Crime Talk. You can find it on Surviving the Survivor, and I'm modeling it. I was like a sports fan for a very long time, and I would listen to The Fan, WFAN in New York City. But it's just imagine like sports talk radio or political talk radio, and we are going to fill that channel with content where you can turn and essentially listen to different experts in different areas of true crime all day long. And we're building it out slowly, but I think it's interesting. And people, I'll give you a very quick example. We've got a guy named Doug McGregor. He's known as the geo profiler, and he solves cases by using geographic modeling. Like, he has a whole method of finding missing people using like coordinates and GPS and different psychological methods and models. And so he's now launched his own show called the Geo Profiler. We have a detective who is both a PhD, so he's the only doctor detective that I know. He's going to be doing a series on detectives. Carm's telling me to stop talking, but there's more to come, more to come.
And we are also into victims of crime,
Advocating for victims.
advocating for victims.
No, I think that's important. Well, a lot to get excited about, a lot to check out. I really appreciate both of your time. All of the links to everything that you just mentioned will be in the show notes. And yeah, I can't thank you enough both for being here.
Thank
And
you.
good luck
Absolute
to you,
pleasure.
and
Carm,
all
you have the
the
last word. Carm, leave us with a word of wisdom.
best. Good luck and all the best.
So that was Joel and Carmela Waldman. What an interview. What an amazing experience. We talk about how I've interviewed 200 plus people. I think we said 300 in this, and that's true between interviewing two people at once or some of the interviews that have never came out. I think this is one of my favorite interviews. Just listening to them banter back and forth. I had so much fun. I had a smile on my face pretty much the entire interview. It's so fun to listen to them. I don't even think I necessarily even had to be there. I guided the interview a little bit, but they seem to always answer the questions before I get to ask them. That's how it always works. But what an awesome mother and son duo. And you know, it's fun, but it's also a really impactful thing that they're sharing. You know, that book, Surviving the Survivor, covers a really tragic story, but one that Carmela's done more than just overcome. I think she's actually conquered her story. And I know that, you know, a lot of their bickering comes completely out of love for each other, and it shows for sure. And I just had such a great time speaking with them. Go check out the book, Surviving the Survivor. Go check out the podcast, Surviving the Survivor. It's on daily. It's a true crime podcast, true crime show on YouTube. All the links to both of those things, the book and Joel's YouTube channels. He talked about having more than just that one now. All that will be in the show notes. Really, really appreciated both of them agreeing to join me. I can't thank them enough. I had so much fun. If this is your first time listening to this podcast or you haven't already, go follow along. Subscribe on Apple or Spotify. Leave a 5-star rating on Apple or Spotify. Leave a written review on Apple. Helps a ton. I hope some people from Surviving the Survivor listen to this, and you already know and love Joel and Carmela, but hopefully this gives you just a little bit more insight of just how amazing these people are. So thanks for being here. Joel, Carmela, thank you both for being here. We'll see y'all next week. Take it away, Chris.
This has been Not in a Huff with Jackson Huff. Thank you for listening. Be sure to join us next time, where we will interview another amazing guest who is sure to make you laugh or make you think, or hey, maybe even both. But until then, keep being awesome.